Good evening. I call to order this February 10th, 2026 meeting of the Blair Mayor and City Council. I am Mindy Rump, the Mayor of Blair, and I am pleased that you have joined us this evening. This is a public meeting and you are part of the process. I encourage you to participate, ask questions, and share your thoughts. I want you to feel comfortable and I will do everything that I can to make sure that your voice is heard. We do have several rules to help us proceed with the meeting and I ask that you please keep them in mind. Please turn off your cell phones. If you need to take a call, step outside the chamber. When you wish to speak, simply raise your hand and I will call you forward to the podium. Brenda Wheeler, our city clerk, must record who you are, so please state your name, spell your last name, and state your address. Keep your remarks brief, about 3 minutes, so that others have the opportunity to speak. And please direct your comments to either myself, city council, or to our city staff. A copy of the Open Meetings Act has been posted by both exits and we will begin this evening with a roll call of members.
Banner?
Present.
Paulson? Long?
Here.
Wolf?
Here.
Willis?
Here.
Clark?
Here.
Lester?
Yep.
Heiko?
Here.
All members present except Paulson.
Thank you. If you'd please stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Item number four, approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Please register your vote.
Did boxes come up?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Item number five, consider resolution 2026-12, approving the newly elected fire chief and first assistant fire chief for the Blair Volunteer Fire Department as voted on at their regular business meeting on February 5th, 2026. Ms. Ferrari? Will you be speaking to us about this evening?
Normally not, which is why I didn't think about it. Good evening, Mayor and Council. This evening we have two new individuals present to you. Our newly elected fire chief, Dave Aiton, and first assistant chief, Luke Jones. They were voted on by the department and accepted by the department. They are both here tonight. And are prepared to serve for the remainder of the term until January 2nd of 2027, I believe the date.
Thank you. Council, how would you like to proceed?
I'd like to introduce resolution 2026.
See, medical especially, they're in their gear for long periods of time, lots of sweat, moisture builds up on the inside of this apparatus. In the past, they just brought them back and hung them up and let them air dry slowly over time. This is an air rack that blows air through the middle of the uniforms and helps dry them out, allows them to get back out in the field quicker with the same uniforms if necessary. And again, as the mayor had said, that they've worked with the rural board to pay for half of this. The quote from Danco included two different items, and it was their choice which one of the ones they wanted to go with, which is why we marked accept on the one for $11,600, which is the Ram Air device, and reject the other one. So total amount, $11,600. We will be paying that up front, and then again, the city will get reimbursed half of that from Rural Fire. So Chief Aiton is here, if you have any questions for him. Otherwise, if you have any questions for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments from the public? Having none, how would council like to proceed?
We met on this as a fire police committee and talked about it as something that the guys need. And it's good that the Blair Rural Fire Department's paying for 50%. So I'd like to authorize the BFD to purchase an air gear dry rack for $11,600 for Rural Fire Board to reimburse half the cost.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to authorize the Blair Volunteer Fire Department to purchase the air gear dryer rack. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Item number seven, we have a request to appear before the mayor and city council by Ted Japp to introduce himself as a candidate for state legislature. Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening. Ted Japp, my name is you all. JAPP 13514, County Road P30, Blair, Nebraska.
Thank you.
Right. Anyway, I'm going to run for the state senator position in the Nebraska legislature. The current senator is Ben Hansen, as you know, from Blair here. He is term limited, and he can't run again, so he's endorsed me to take his place. District 16 consists of Washington County, Burke County, Cumming County, and part of Stanton County. And it's a large county. It's about 100 miles across that. I think I'm well qualified to have this position. I'm a lifetime Washington County resident. In fact, I'm a fifth generation Washington County resident. My great-great-grandpa came here in the 1860s before Blair even existed and bought farmland in and around Kenner, Nebraska. In fact, the land I live on right now is part of his original land purchase, so we've been around here for quite a long time. If you fast forward about 100 years from the 1860s, about 1960s, I remember coming into Blair quite often. In fact, I'd bring eggs in with my grandma to one of the grocery stores, which is located where the police department is right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody remembers that or not.
Oh, yeah.
And then you walk to the end of the block, you go to the Five and Dime, the Ben Franklin store, I'd buy a little case of BBs then. You walk down to Scheffler's, and that was a great thing to do because try on the gloves, you bounce the basketballs and so forth. Could never afford to buy any of them, but it was always great to go to Scheffler's. Then I have to meet my grandma again at the end of the block where the Washington County Bank was, which is now Fastwire. So things have changed in 100 years. A lot of things changed then. And the 50 or 55 years since then, it's changed again. And it continues to progress forward. And I think you all deserve a lot of compliments for your leadership to help Blair continue to move forward. And I guess I would like to be part of that leadership also to help Blair and Washington County move forward also. I think I'm uniquely qualified, having been here literally my entire life. I've run successful small businesses myself, and I've been on the board of directors of the Papillion, Missouri River Natural Resources District for two different terms, so I've had a lot of experience in a lot of different areas, and I would be thrilled to be your state senator. But mostly what I'd like to know from you is that what challenges do you face here in the city of Blair that the state of Nebraska, the state legislature could help with? Are there laws that need to be changed? Are there laws that need to be added? Or what can the state of Nebraska, the state legislator, do to help you in your jobs as city council for the city of Blair? Is there anything that comes to mind at all that I could think on and work on in the future? Yes?
One thing, during COVID, in 2020, during COVID, most states allowed municipalities, fire departments, other branches to do Zoom calls for meetings during their meetings.
Right.
And they were legitimate meetings. They could vote and do everything. Nebraska never did that. We're one of the only states that didn't do that.
Did they give you a reason why not?
It's not. It just got has to be passed as a law.
Okay. That's
so that would be something to work on because, sometimes we've got to travel. And I know when I travel, I would definitely, try to Zoom in if I could.
Right.
And participate, as well as you can, and usually you can do a pretty good
job. Yeah, that's a good point. That was brought up even in our NRD meetings. There were people out of town.
And you wouldn't be able to do Zoom in on those either, right?
And so that's an excellent idea. We can talk about that later, but if I'm elected. So, but that's an excellent point. I would like to see that happen. So anything else that you can think of? All right. If anything else comes to mind, I won't take any more of your time, but I appreciate this time with you today, and I would appreciate your support. I've got some just basic information about me. Can I leave it over here or pass it out to you, or what
sure.
Do we do?
Sure. Yeah. You can pass it out. Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Ben.
Thank you, sir. If you have any questions about any position I have on different things, there's some contact information on that also. So please let me know.
Thank you, Mr. Japp.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 8. We have our Library Board Annual Report presented by Board President Carson Noreen. Good evening.
Good evening. Hi, Council and Mayor. I'm Carson Noreen. I am the current Library Board President serving here, and I'm going to go ahead and this guy up and running. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. All right, I just want to go ahead and just go through briefly some highlights from this. This is the October 24th. Through September 25, our year. Finances for that, we had total revenue of $1.2 million, and our expenditures were just shy of a million there. So most of it from the city. Thank you so much for your support and your provision for our citizens. That's about all I'm going to say about that right now. The things that I like to talk about are what actually happens in the library, what services they provide. Just to give you an update on our collection for this. The actual physical items that we have there, our librarians go through, and they've added over 4,000 items in this last year, and weeded out over 5,000 items, so a total of nearly 40,000 items there. If I'm being completely honest, so the next one is my favorite thing. I am an audiobook guy through Libby all the way. And so I shamelessly use my children's account because you can only reserve 3 books at a time. I want 9. So, so that is one of my favorite services. And the thing I love about that is librarians are really good about when you need something that is not in our library. We're a small town, I get it. But we love that about ourselves, that they can take us so much further and so much further for our kids and our citizens. And so that's just one way to do this. So, close to 100,000 items there. As far as programs go, this is the fun stuff. If you've ever seen Intuit, just read our newspaper in the summer and you'll see this all over the place. What they provide, and something that's been kind of great, is it's a highlight for our kids in the summer. School's out. I'm a teacher, so school's out. Kids can enjoy that. But you're noticing adult programs start to just have a lot of those and start to boom. Total attendance is almost 10 grand, and so it's just a lot of people attending those programs. They put in all different kinds of stuff, be it games, be it activities, be it teaching, 3D printing, all the different things with our laser cutter. That kind of gets into our services. So beyond just actual libraries, there's so much more than books. It's a board. We talk about this, how we want to support our librarians and that. And this is just one of the awesome things of all the people at the library, the services they provide for us. I'm amazed by how many number of card holders, just the sheer amount of people that are a part of, registered, and want to be active in our library. It's just amazing. The visits, I love that we have a counter there that actually tallies when people come through, and so that keeps us up to date. The reference transactions is very impressive. That is actually like person to person at the table going through every year, someone interacting, a human touch that just shows you a service that you guys are allowing us as a city to provide. So thank you for that. And then of course, beyond just the books that we have, if there's something that you need to get a hold of, these librarians will do it for you. And so that's what those interlibrary loan ones that we borrowed or ones that we took in that we did not have as a library but citizens wanted to get, and then the ones that we loaned out to other people, that we have these resources that are valuable, that they share those as well. And then I love the bottom right corner. We'll drive to that, and this is one of the fun things you get on your ticket if you ever borrow, is that they tell you how much you save each year, which is just something that my kids are baffled at when they see that. I don't know, a holy amount of money. I'm like, you guys, like, that is what those books cost, and they're providing. I always say, and we're providing that for you guys. And so thank you for that. But that's just a fun feature of that. That's not mine. It's fun. So thank you so much for that. Do you guys have any questions at all?
I don't. Just to thank you, Carson, for your dedication, especially serving as president for the board. And Wendy, thank you to you for your leadership as our director. It's very apparent that it's very well used. So thank you.
And thank you for the good hire last year with the board. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet.
Thank you.
Item number 9, we have a presentation from Strong Towns on the approach to land use and finance using value per acre, emphasizing how this approach could be used during the comprehensive planning process. Mr. Loftus, good evening.
Hi, Mayor and Council. Setting up my notes here. It's for your benefit that I follow my notes. I'm prone to ramble. I'm Jake with Strong Towns. I co-lead the local conversation group here in Blair. At Strong Towns, we talk about how we can make cities safe, livable, and financially solvent. That's one thing that we talk about all the time in our group. I have
Jake,
a slideshow.
Jake, last name and address, if you
would. Loftis, 2129 Park Street.
Thank you.
All right, well, we're a local conversation, so when we talk about local things, we're not talking about national politics, we're talking about local issues. It's a conversation, it's not Facebook comments, rage bait battle, or anything like that. We're talking about local things. We don't just complain about things, we want to take action. So that's what our group is all about. Tonight, I'm going to be talking to you about redefining success, and we're going to talk about that by doing something in Strong Towns that we call doing the math. So we can, and we're doing the math so we can have an honest conversation about growth and development in our city. So this is kind of a strong towns approach. It's not necessarily a list of things to do. It's more about how do we think. And rather than going through all of it, that's not necessarily what this presentation is about. But I just wanted to say that we're, I'm going to touch on all of these things during our presentation today, but really focusing in on doing the math. So that's really where we're going to spend most of our time. But first, I want to tell you a story. This is actually from a scene from a movie. If you've seen this movie, this is Moneyball. It's a story about the Oakland A's. They're a team that doesn't have much money. Every year, they get their best talent robbed by teams with big money, like the Yankees. And they're at this table. He's at this table with all his scouts, and they are trying to solve. Scouts are trying to solve the problem: how do we replace all these players we've lost? And they're talking about things like how smooth a person's swing is, what are they like in the locker room, what do they look like. But the GM, played by Brad Pitt, is asking a different question. So he's asking the question: how do we get wins when we can't afford the players that everybody else wants? How are we going to win with players when we can't play the same game that they're playing? And so they decide to redefine the problem, and what they end up doing is getting undervalued players who are okay, but they have one stat that's really great. They get on base a lot. They get on base. And by building their team this way, by getting these undervalued players on their team who fit that stat, they are able to go on a 20-game winning streak. They're in the 2002 World Series. It's a great movie. I recommend it. But this is kind of how this applies to what we're talking about. Is we cannot just rely on what seems right, what looks good in our town. And so what I'm going to talk about when we talk about doing the math is we're going to talk about how can we measure measure like in the baseball, they're measuring stats on players. How do we do that with our town, our parcels, with our properties, with the buildings, with the developments that we have in our town? How do we measure that? So first of all, we have to be able to compare things apples to apples. And so we understand how to do this. We do this all the time with cars. Right here in this slide, we see three cars. That's how many miles they can go on a tank of gas, right? While that might be really good information, it doesn't tell us anything about their efficiency or their operating cost, how much it's going to cost you to carry that vehicle. So that's why when we are shopping for vehicles, we talk about miles per gallon, right? This is what we do with measuring efficiency in cars. How many resources do they use up? And then we can compare these things when we have, when now we're comparing these things apples to apples. And you can see the graph looks a lot different. We can do the same thing with our city. We do this with a $3 to $4 commodity. We should be able to do it with land, which is much, much more valuable. But if we don't have clear terminology for how to talk about this in our built environment, we'll end up asking the wrong questions. We'll ask questions like, does this project or does this development fit our zoning ordinances? We'll say, does it look good? Will people like it? And those are fine questions to ask. They're not that. It's not that those are bad questions, but let's be honest, those questions are about preferences. Even the zoning. They don't answer questions about value. If we were asking value questions, we would ask questions like, will this development be able to pay for the infrastructure? We collect enough taxes to pay for the to maintain the infrastructure that serves it? Will it be a productive use of land? Is there an opportunity cost to using land this way rather than that way? So we have to be able to talk about these questions. Those questions I just listed are questions about resilience, financial solvency, and so we need to be honest. Otherwise we'll just end up kind of just taking it on faith that every development will eventually pay for itself. We'll be able to pay for the roads, the pipes, all the things. So that's why when we talk about we don't talk about obviously miles per gallon. We talk about value per acre. So what's the base resource of our city? It's land. We don't have a limit on how many businesses we can have or how many homes we can have. We have a limit on how much space we can take up. Limits like, watersheds, rivers, county lines, distance to, you know, to maintenance facilities, that sort of thing. And a lot of times when I hear developers come in and speak to the council, they'll talk about the total value of a property, of a development. They'll say this will bring in $35 million to the city. That is a total value. That's like miles per tank. When we actually need to be talking about, and this is the point, we need to be talking about how much land is used versus, and the value that it's gonna contribute. So to get a clear picture of this, we need to be talking about things in terms of value per acre. Not just relying on what fits our zone. We need to be asking this question. Will this be a productive use of valuable land? So this is the challenge with this, is it's really hard to see productive land use. You might look at something, and we see all kinds of things here. We see buildings, we see businesses, people, cars. We know that there's some sort of value, there's a cash flow that's happening, and that cash flow is what we tax, right? And that's how we pay for the infrastructure. Things we can't see, like streets, sidewalk, parking. Things we can't see, pipes. Things under the ground, right? It also pays for the services, the fire, snow removal, police. We know that there's some sort of cash flow that's happening here, but it's really hard to see. So to make good decisions, we need to actually do the math. This will actually be what will help us see the value. And so that's why the thing that we are advocating for is being able to do math on the city. So what you're seeing here is this is basically a heat map. This is done by a company called Urban 3. They do this type of work to, they didn't pay me to be here. I'm just advocating for this kind of work. This is what they do. They it's a heat map, so you can see the parcels with high value are higher, and the low value parcels are cooler and short. Right? So this is a way of making that invisible cash flow visible. You can see where is the value in your city? Where is the value coming from? How much does it look like on a per acre basis? So this is what it looks like in numbers. So this is total value. We talked about that earlier. This is the total value of this building. This is in Urban 3's hometown. This is more of Urban 3's work. This is the total value of the Walmart. This is the total value of this building right here. And so when we look at those two developments, it looks like, well, one, the Walmart is obviously outperforming it. But that's total value. That's like getting miles per tank. So when we look at how much land it consumes, it's a much different story. So Walmart takes up 34 acres. This building right here sits on 0.2 acres of land. So that means there's going to be a lot of frontage road, a lot of pipe, a lot of stormwater runoff that's going to be involved in the infrastructure of this building. So when we start looking at them on a per acre basis, it tells a very different story. So this is property tax per acre, sales tax per acre, residences per acre, obviously nobody lives at Walmart, and jobs per acre. Right? And so this is a story. This is not saying we can't have Walmarts. Walmarts are bad, but we can have an honest conversation about what the opportunity costs are of building one way versus another. This is another thing that Value Per Acre does. This is more work that Urban 3 did in Springfield, Missouri. You can see here, we got low density, the high density, different uses, residential, commercial, mixed use. Right here, you can look at the values. These are just average properties. They were the median properties. Analysis they did of the whole city. The highest value comes right here in mixed use, high density. Right, so when we get down here in this quadrant right here, this is where you have the most high returning asset, their properties. That's where you're gonna see these type of spikes. Not, those aren't high rise buildings, they're probably buildings that look like that. And these are the lower value properties. Now when we think about how much of our city is zoned for this versus that, now we can kind of see, oh, well, are we putting are we using our land use in valuable ways? So this is value. This is what the kind of things that value per acre, doing value per acre analysis can show us. Having a true, honest conversation about this is the kind of value that we can expect from this type of properties, this type of land use versus these land uses. Once again, not saying that we can't have any of these. It's just a matter of, is there going to be enough to make up for the losses? So that brings me to this next thing. This is more work that Urban 3 does. This is a return on investment map. So red is losses, black is profits, I guess. And this is their analysis of Lafayette, Louisiana. This is where they're actually doing math on how much infrastructure, what are the infrastructure costs for this parcel? How much road is it used? Actually doing the math of how much road, how much will it cost to replace it, how many pipes, how much will it cost to replace it, and how much the revenue the city is collecting, and what's the difference between those two. So this is a map of a whole city, and this is actually a city that went pretty hard in low density residential. And you can see they're dealing with a lot of losses. So they're having to make hard decisions about what roads do we maintain? What parks do we let go? Which is kind of like triage. Because they didn't have enough, they didn't do the math to find out that these things are all gonna be ending up in losses. Some of these you can see are huge. So here's what this looks like. Wrapping up, this is what it looks like on a map. So we got three different developments. So the question is does density matter if the revenue is the same? So we've got low density, medium density, high density. This requires 2.7 miles of infrastructure. This one, 2. This one, less than 1 mile of infrastructure. And so this is, and on a budget, this would look like we're doing okay. But when we look at the return on investment, how much is it going to cost? How much are we going to have to put away to replace all 2.7 miles of infrastructure eventually? This is what Urban 3's work comes in really valuable, is it shows this is what you can expect from this parcel. This is, obviously, these are ours. This is just an example. So you can see the only one that really returns a significant investment is high density. So if we were to build a low density and a medium density, we'd feel like it was going really well. It would look great, but what would happen eventually is, and it wouldn't affect our budget until we needed to start replacing things. And then we would realize we don't have enough to cover. If we built one of these, we would have at least 2 high density developments to cover the cost. So this is just a picture that shows they can do it over across the whole city. And that leads me to my wrap up here. So value per acre in Blair. We actually have started doing some ourselves. Not the return on investment. We don't have the technical knowledge, and we definitely can't make the 3D maps. But Brian is going to be presenting at the next council meeting some of the things we found, where we just do some math and look at how much land does this parcel use up, how much is it paying in property taxes, public information, and we just do a math equation. And we can start comparing. Where is the value? Like what places are high value areas compared to others? And once again, this isn't to blame and shame, it's to be honest. Like, this is what this is like. And so tying this back to the Moneyball example, right? We don't necessarily need to be chasing home run type of developments, waiting for a large scale investor or developer to come in and save us. The idea is that we can win with lots of base hits if we're doing the math to find out what developments are getting on base, if that makes sense. If we think that if we do this, we can make land decisions with this type of information that will allow us to, I guess, find higher value, more productive, and create a culture of resilience in our city, where we won't have to make budget decisions like we can't build this park project that we want to because we have to hire policemen. which we should definitely hire policemen. I'm not saying that, but we shouldn't. We definitely should. But now we have to say no to the things we want, because if we're not making the choices that are actually putting us in places where we're making a profit, or rather not taking losses. And so this is why this type of information is valuable. Thank you. Brian will be here at the next meeting. He'll do more math for you, actual math. I'm not a math person, so he's doing that one. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jake.
Mr. Loftus, I have a couple of observations. I think that your presentation, at least I felt, overlooked a very basic assumption that we don't own this land. As a city council, we're just kind of making guidance of what types of things the land can be used for. It's up to the property owner to decide whether he wants to build a high density or lower density, depending on what their feeling of the value of the land is. That's an interesting proposition, but I don't think that it really is an apples and apples and oranges to oranges comparison to the Moneyball analogy, because a team owns the whole budget, the property, and in the sense they own the players through contract. The city doesn't own the land.
No.
That's not the, it wouldn't be about, but you do decide use based on density. You have, then in your code, you decide when it's zoned, it's low density, medium density, high density. Mm-hmm. And if it's commercial, it's mixed use, those things are all dictated in zoning. And that can be, and you can add and subtract. Those are made up rules that you can add and subtract to. And so if you are seeing something that is not producing value, you can change your zoning code to allow it or not allow it. Does that make sense? Now I understand, like, it's not exactly like you're not developing this and you're not making it happen, but you do decide on how it is used. And so when you zone a certain way, that may have cost implications.
I have a problem with how that might affect a property owner telling them we're zoning this land and restricting how you can value it based on how profitable it is to us.
Well, you can change it. But that's how it is right now on the books. That's the zoning code that you currently have.
Right.
Is zoning by use. You can change to a different type of zoning code, like a form-based code. Mm-hmm. But right now you have a use-based code that already dictates that. And if I was a developer and I wanted to build high density, high value properties, which is most of the city, I wouldn't be allowed to. That's already happened.
I think what Mr. Loftus is saying too, as we go forward with our comprehensive plan, which needs to be done, because how old is our current comprehensive plan?
10 years.
So as we go forward with that, be cognizant of these things that Jake's bringing up, just as we start to do our new comprehensive plan.
And you can hire that. Urban 3, either as a subcontractor or whoever you decide to go with, to do this type of analysis for you. It's really hard, we found. It's not easy to do it all. You can put it all in a spreadsheet, but it won't look like those maps. And that's the value of what they can do. And they can do a return on investment to see, okay, well, where, not once again, it's not to say you're not pulling your weight, but it is a matter of land use decisions. So we can see, we really need to upzone here. Mm-hmm. Because we need more higher productive value from this part of the city because we have so many losses over here. And so those are the type of informed decisions that if you don't have that, you're just taking on faith that it's probably going to work out. And maybe it will, but chances are, depending on how you zone, it may not.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
And Mayor, if I could, just real quick, just to add a couple comments. Number one, you're exactly right. I'll have more comments at the very end about the comprehensive plan. We're very, very early in this process of moving forward with having a new comprehensive plan put together. I just want to publicly thank Jake and Brian Knudsen and their leadership for the Blair Strong Towns. They meet twice a month over at the library on Monday nights oftentimes. And I go to as many of those meetings as I can simply because they're having a lot of these hard conversations that I think are worth while to have. Now, both of those guys need to realize they're going to be on my short list when it comes to you know, being very involved in this comprehensive plan as well. But it's helpful, I think, as a community to begin to have some of these conversations, knowing, though, that we don't dictate a lot of the things that people sometimes think that we dictate. You know, we're there to help. But we're also there to recruit really good developers and try to do some enticing things, and things that are interesting and ultimately things that are really good for the community. So thank you for the opportunity. They were requested to do this. We broke it up into two different sessions, so you can thank me for not having the whole half hour presentation. But like Jake said, Brian will be here next council meeting for the fall. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Item number 10, consider a motion authorizing staff to seek removal of industrial tract designation of 8 parcels in the county industrial tract under Nebraska Revised Statute 13-1111 and 13-1121. Mr. Barra?
Good evening, Mayor, Council. This evening we'd like to talk to you a little bit about the industrial tract around the biocampus, and just a little bit of history going back to 1960-ish. Nebraska had very few, if any, financial incentives for development, particularly industrial development. And so one of the things that they did is they created these county industrial tracts, which, long story short, it basically built a fence around these designated parcels that would disallow any kind of annexation from the municipality, thereby saving them city property tax. And back in the early 80s, 81 and 82, there were 3 tranches of parcels of land that were designated as county industrial tracts. Several of these pieces have already been removed from the that designation because they didn't develop in accordance with the statute, didn't meet the definition. Their primary use did not meet the definition of industry as it's set forth in the statute. And we're going to talk to you about 8 different parcels this evening that are in that same boat. Under Nebraska law, we can petition the county board to pull these from that designation in 100 years in the month of March. We're coming up on that time. And so I'm going to walk you through here real quick. So just again, high level, we have 8 parcels that we're going to ask you to authorize us to go forward with. We don't think that they meet the definition of industry. Their primary use does not meet that definition. The reason is sometime in the future, this body may choose to expand our boundaries, and we can't do it that way right now. And we've gone through these. These are ones that we really believe that don't meet the definition. And I've already made this point, so I'm going to pass you. All right. Again, the criteria is primary use. There's 2 criteria. Primary use has an industrial character, and secondly, another use is it has not developed within 7 years of the designation. So you're going to see 3 of them that are bare ground, were designated in 1981, and were never developed. It's farm ground. All right, here's what we're talking about. The first one I would bring up to your attention is Mid-America Commuter Corporation. It's right here. Then we have ProForms, PFI. They do some screen printing and promotional products. The old Monsanto building is right here, which is currently vacant and has been vacant for about 10 years. Kenneth Roofing, Gerhold Concrete, and then the 3 ag parcels I was talking to you about with Food Warner. Going through them in that order, Mac, their primary use is billing solutions, customer management software, data processing. None of those primary uses meet the industrial definition. PFI does custom form creation and printing. Those don't meet that industrial use either. McKinnis Roofing, their primary business is commercial residential roofing. They do bend steel components, but it's for sale to the general public. And that is one of the conditions that you can't do retail-like sales to the general public, according to the statute. Here are the three food liner parcels, just south of the marina, undeveloped since 1981 when they were designated. Gearhold Concrete, concrete batching aggregate operations does not meet the definition. And then lastly, the Monsanto building, it's unused and vacant since 2016. It's currently being held by a property management company, or a holding company, rather. And I think it's being used for storage by a neighbor. So you can see all of those properties fail the primary use definition, condition of the statute. Three of them were never developed at all. So we're seeking your permission this evening to go before the county board at one of their meetings next month to ask the county board to consider removing them from that designation. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, and they may decide not to take action right away. I think the last time that they did take action on something was 2008, and I think Phil was involved in that, and they didn't act on it until the following September. So it's not something that's going to happen right away, but we are coming to you to ask for permission to go ahead and make that request.
So, Aaron, they don't have to act in March. We just can only request in March.
Correct.
They can take their time acting on it. Okay. March of an even year.
Yes. I think the moon phase plays a role.
Okay.
Too, so.
Got it. Do you have any questions for Mr. Barrow? Thank you. Any comments from the public? Having none, how would council like to proceed?
I'll make a motion to authorize staff to seek removal of industrial tract designation of 8 parcels in the county industrial tract under Nebraska Revised Statute 13-1111 and 13-1121.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to authorize staff to seek removal of the industrial tract designations. Please register your vote. Motion passes. Item number 11, consider resolution 2026-13, creating the Employee Wellness Reimbursement Program. Mr. Gould.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Ben Gould, HR Manager for the City of Blair. Tonight before you is our Employee Wellness Reimbursement Program. I think this has been in the hopper for about 12, 16 months now. We've been trying to track down everything and put it all together with a nice bow. Tonight, the purpose of this program, or this policy, is designed to support our employee health, the fitness, and overall well-being. Healthier employees, as we've seen before, generally lead to reduced absenteeism, improved morale, and long-term healthcare cost savings. So with this program, we have essentially two buckets that our employees will be eligible to submit for reimbursement. The first is 50% off of eligible fitness expenses from gym memberships. So if someone has a gym membership, they can submit a receipt. If that receipt is $50 every month, the city would reimburse them $25 for that month. We felt it wasn't fair and fiscally responsible to pay outright the full cost upfront for each reimbursement. Mainly to also provide some skin in the game for the employees. You know, it's not just a, hey, here's free money, but this is a program we're all working together for that wellness overall. So the maximum amount per month is $36 per employee. That's an annual cap of $432 per employee with no carryover. So how we got to those figures is using the $35,000 the City Council approved this last budget for this line item for employee wellness benefit. I took that $35,000, divided it by 80 employees. We don't currently have 80 employees. We're slightly below that, but knowing our gaps in the water plant and police department that we're gonna be filling, we took 80 employees. That came out to $36.45 per employee. So we just rounded down to give us some room, but $36 per employee. Like I said, gym membership is one of those buckets. That's fitness studio classes, some digital fitness subscriptions too. As the City Council said too, we don't wanna just give nice reimbursement just to one gym or one entity. So we wanted to leave that open. So fitness from YMCA membership or membership from Anytime Fitness, we wanted to leave that open. The second bucket is for the fitness equipment. So that can be weights, a treadmill, my wife's laughing at me at home, resistance bands, even wearable fitness trackers. So we wanted to provide those two buckets, again, to promote the overall well-being of our employees, not just limit it to receipts from gym memberships. Employees must submit an itemized receipt showing the vendor date and amount paid. Gym receipts are submitted quarterly to help ease as we pay out these employees, so it's not just constant inflow of receipts and trying to get all that on the payroll. There is a, what I would say, a ticket to get into this program, and that is proof of your last, or a proof of a physical, annual physical within the last 12 months. So employees are not eligible to receive reimbursement unless they can show us proof of going to the a physician and getting their annual physical. Again, that's promoting employees to help with that preventative care, again, overall well-being. For this first year, since this is new, we decided to waive that requirement of the physical, but starting October 1 of this year, 2026, if an employee wants reimbursed November 13th, 2026, I'm gonna ask, show me proof that you went to your annual physical. We went back and forth on this, how this proof was gonna be done. We have, and I don't think it's attached today, but we actually came up with a form. It's a City of Blair form that is very, very basic. We don't want to get anywhere close to, and I don't want to see anything that goes on at a physical of any doctor notes or anything, but it's a form that the employees have to come to me, ask for it, I give it to them, the physicians just sign and put the date of when that employee has seen their physician. They sign it, they return it to me, no questions, because I don't want to get too close to HIPAA or anything like that. So with that, the last thing, again, it's only eligible for full-time employees, and the dollar amounts are taxable fringe benefits. So it's not just a straight flat dollar amount that can go in their pocket. Any questions? I do have Erica Pierce, Erica Stark. She got married, Erica Stark representing the CAC committee, because we did present this to the CAC committee, again, City Alliance team, made up of several representatives throughout the city. She's here too to answer any questions or anything.
Thank you.
Any comments from the public?
Sean Cooper, COOPER, 2300 College Drive. I just have a question regarding the reimbursement on equipment. You said 50% for gyms. How are you going to determine who gets what on equipment? I mean, somebody might buy $25 worth of, you know, resistance bands, and somebody else might buy $1,000 worth of weightlifting equipment.
Yeah, great question. And I apologize, I didn't clarify that. So the 50% is on both gym memberships as well as the equipment. So if someone comes to me and says, I bought an Apple Watch to help with my fitness, it costs $500, we would reimburse them for $250. Again, the cap of $432 is the cap, whether that's a gym membership or a trackable fitness band or a treadmill, so if an employee comes to us and purchases a large dollar item for their home gym, and it costs $800. I'm going to reimburse them $400. They only have $32 left for that fiscal year to get reimbursed for something. So again, the cap is capped. We're paying any receipt that comes in, it's 50%. So I apologize for not clarifying that.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Having none, Finance Committee.
We met on this, as well as had the opportunity to sit in with the CAT team meetings. Feel that it is a very, very beneficial thing, as Ben had mentioned, for the morale and the well-being of our employees, which is what we really want to see. We feel it's a fair amount, gives them flexibility to go to any gym that they want to, or if they want to stay at home and do home fitness, it gives them that flexibility. So if no one has any questions, I'd like to introduce Resolution 2026-13.
Resolution number 2026-13 was introduced by Councilmember Parks, creating the Employee Wellness Reimbursement Program.
I'd like to make a motion to adopt Resolution 2026-13 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution number 2026-13. Please register your vote. Motion passes. Item number 12, consider Resolution 2026-14, approving amendment number 3 with HDR for the Highway 75 pump station project. Mr. Heaton, first time we're seeing you tonight.
I know.
Shocker.
And I'll keep it short.
Oh, excellent.
Thank you, Mayor. As the council knows, we've been working with HDR on design and plans for a new pump station along Highway 75, just south of the Blair YMCA. When we first started talking to the landowner that has this property, they had mentioned that there's some interest in developing the lot. At the time, it was maybe some mixed housing, nothing too carried away. So we had tentatively agreed that in exchange for the property, we would look at considering paying for the access off the highway, because we have the connections with the state to get that kind of stuff done. Since then, the property owner and the developer have come back with a little more fleshed out development idea, more multifamily use and commercial use. And I think that will be coming to the Planning Commission and the Council in the coming months. But given that there might be more scope to their development, MDOT asked for a traffic study. And so we've asked HDR to draft this amendment to include that traffic study as part of their engineering. One thing I will point out that we did save a few dollars working with MDOT, that we were able to get all of that. Talking to each other, sorry about that. But we did talk with MDOT, and they're going to share all the traffic data they have from the Hollow Road bypass studies, so the city doesn't have to do any other data collection. They said all of that data was new enough, and they would accept all of that for this study. So HDR will just be using that data and be able to have a study back to us within 8 weeks. So that should time out pretty good with what the developer's plans are. And then we'll continue to coordinate with them how much the city will be involved in whatever construction needs done, whether the state comes back and a simple access is all we need, or if we need turn lanes and things like that. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any comments from the public? Having none, Water and Sewer Committee. Did you meet?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did meet on this. Sorry, Nebraska was playing. So, yeah, just like CJ had mentioned, right? So some of the scope has been defined a little bit more. We need to do a traffic study. If there's no questions, I'll introduce Resolution 2026-14.
Resolution number 2026-14 was introduced by Councilmember Letcher, approving amendment number 3 with HDR for Highway 75 pump station project.
Motion to adopt resolution 2026-14 is presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution number 2026-14. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Mr. Green.
Thank you, Mayor. Minute left, down by 7. So. Never good. Just a couple things to bring to your attention. Number one, the BSNA implementation continues to go well. I'm really, really excited about the program. I mean, I have great high hopes that it's really going to increase our efficiency across the board. But as any of you know, when you get a brand new software package, even though you've been kind of trained on certain basic parts of it, it's like, okay, now I got to sit down and drive this car. How do I exactly do that? And so we're at that kind of somewhat awkward stage. But I am working really hard with all of our department leaders to acknowledge that right up front. I want them to acknowledge that there's the pain points that they have to work themselves through. So in fact, at every one of our weekly staff meetings, we go around the room, everyone talks about what they're particularly working on, what dragon they're gonna slay this week, if you will, to kind of get past that and learn to use that program a little bit better. But we're in the middle of the grind, but we're learning weekly, we're growing weekly, and so all of that's really good. And again, the capabilities of the software just far outnumber what we had before. Regarding the utilities specifically and the paperless accounts, pleased to let you know that we're up to 76% of those now who have registered for the paperless. So that's exciting, and I continue to hear, you know, every day somebody comes in and doesn't want to have to continue to pay for receiving an invoice at home. So that's good news. I want to share with you a little bit of progress on our planning efforts. It's back to what the mayor had talked about before with our comprehensive plan. And these are all things that we had talked about in this year's budget, all been planned for, but now it's time for us to move forward with. So Aaron brought up the city's website. If you actually go to the main homepage and then you would go down into the departments for public works, this is one of the pages that comes off of the public works area. We've created a new one that's called, over on the left side, Open City Solicitations. So this is kind of a landing page that we will always use. Now, one of the things that I'm excited about is the fact that we're trying to put in place some procedures that we will continue to use even going forward after these particular plans right now. You know, it's not uncommon that CJ's needs to solicit some bids for a particular project that needs to be done. Now we're going to be beginning to get our vendors used to having one place that they can always go look at. And what we've signed up for is a software package called Beacon that is kind of a lighthouse beacon that is a place that people can see and know about. It's fairly well known nationally. It's a place where various contractors can go and register for the kind of services that they have to offer. And then any municipalities that use the Beacon service who put something out for a particular kind of vendor, then they automatically get contacted and told when we post some kind of a bid request or something like that. So this happens to be, again, the landing page that comes off of Beacon's site and kind of emulates a little bit of what's there on ours. And right now we've got one of the offers that's out there. So this happens to be a request for qualifications for our Safe Streets for All grant that we got. So as you may recall, we got a planning grant for Safe Streets for All, which is, again, designed to help put together the overall city plan for what we want to do when it comes to safe streets. You have to have one of those in place then in order to qualify for any future grants that would be the actual construction. So this is the planning side of it, not the construction side, but you have to have those things in place as well. This is the Beacon site then and where they would go and where they can register. They can download the information, what the RFQ says. This happens to be an RFQ that we have put together in-house using some demos that came from Beacon as well as some AI. So I don't have time tonight to go into the AI, but we're really starting to learn as well. I'm just finishing up a class that I've been taking on AI prompting. I really do think it's something that's going to be key and critical for us moving forward to just kind of help do better work in-house on our own and quicker. So this is the one for Safe Streets for All. We should have these proposals back within a month, and we're hoping second meeting in March to have a recommendation for you for the vendor that we're going to go with for the Safe Streets for All. We also talked earlier tonight, though, about the request for qualifications for the comprehensive plan. Again, it's been 10 years since we've done that. Oftentimes, what you do is you request qualifications. Basically, if you're a firm that's qualified to be able to work with a community to lead them through a comprehensive plan proposal, then submit this statement of qualifications, they call it an SOQ, and then submit basically a packet that says, well, here's our qualifications as a firm, here's the individuals that we would have work on your particular team. You've already told us in your RFQ kind of a general scope of work that needs to be done, so here is how we would attack that. Here's maybe a recommended timeline that we would put together going forward, but it doesn't have any pricing in it. Basically, they're laying out their qualifications, and then you ultimately grade all of those based on some metrics that are put together, and they need to be kind of established metrics. You grade all of those, and then ultimately you invite generally 3 to 5 different firms to come in and do an actual in-person interview. We're planning to do that with this. It's the same process that we did 10 years ago when we last did the comprehensive plan. A little bit of a twist, though, on it. We're going to be getting this one out posted either tonight or tomorrow morning, the RFQ for the comprehensive plan. They'll have until March 6th to get their SOQ back into us. We'll do that initial review with a committee that I'll work with the mayor on to put together to finalize those final 3 firms that we want to invite to come do an actual interview. And our plan is to make this process and this whole comprehensive approach, the plan approach, as public as we can. And so we're planning the next 5th Tuesday, which happens to be March 31st, to be a night where we're going to you and we're inviting the citizens to come interview 3 of these different firms. All of them will have an hour time slot. They'll probably do about a 30-minute presentation, 15 minutes for some questions from you and from others, 15-minute transition until the next one gets up. And so the citizens will have an opportunity to come here from these 3 different firms. And then the first meeting in April, which will be April 14th, will be an opportunity to take testimony from any of the citizens that came to that night. They can share their opinions, and then you'll have an opportunity to vote that night and select the one firm that we're going to go forward with for the comprehensive plan. We anticipate that it's a 12 to 18 month process to do this comprehensive plan. Lots of public meetings, lots of public input. It will be the great opportunity for citizens to express themselves as far as what they want to see Blair be like 10, 15, 20 years from now, which is what a comprehensive plan covers. So very excited that we're continuing to move forward then with that. You know, this last year was kind of a year of transition to software, other issues that we were getting up and going. This coming year is going to continue to be a year of planning and just kind of laying that groundwork for what it's going to look like in the days to come. So excited about that and excited about this new tool that we have available to us. We'll keep you posted on that, and I'll keep you posted as far as Mayor and I working then, because one of the things we'll have to do is put together a steering committee that will work regularly then with our consultant as we move through that process. But lots of public meetings, public online surveys, all kinds of things like that for people to be sharing their opinions and thoughts on. Any questions that you have for me?
Thank you.
All right. I'd like to propose a motion to adjourn this meeting in Blair City Council. Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting. Please register your vote. Meeting adjourned.